This is the Office Manager Diaries, a podcast all about the highs and the lows of professionals in office management around the world. We'll delve into their career journeys and diaries where they'll share their stories, tips for success, and only things office managers understand. Enjoy, and please remember to give us a follow. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Office Manager Diaries. I'm really delighted today to be joined by Byron Kimona, who is the Workplace Experience Manager at Cushman & Wakefield. Hi, Byron.
Hello. How are you doing, Hannah?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great, great. Thank you for having me today.
Pleasure, a real pleasure. Thanks for giving up your time to come on the podcast with us. So can you share more to start us off with about you, a bit of history, how you got into this role and the world of facilities and office management to begin with?
Absolutely. I started mainly in hospitality, so hotels. So I was born and raised in Spain, so that's a completely different story. But I started in hotels over there, enjoyed it quite a lot. I was in front office, so obviously more of a services environment and hospitality. And then I decided to move over to the UK and kept on in hotels. But I always had that itch for corporates. But it always felt, don't know, I think that may have changed now, but I always felt that there was a ceiling that we couldn't go through. We worked at a hotel. Corporate always felt very far away. You had to be from not sure. That's always the thing that I thought that it was really hard, because I started having interviews earlier on trying to get into a corporate reception or as a supervisor. And it was always like, oh no, your background's too hospitality based. So after many years of going through hotels, five-star hotels as well, again, quite a lot of knowledge in that kind of realm, I then really decided to go in full on into corporate. And I managed to land my first role as a community manager, which back in the day, what was it, 2016, 2017? I did not know what a community manager was. I thought it was to do with social media. Which I wasn't aiming to. So that's when the job came over and I started the interviews. I was a bit confused on the role itself, but that obviously was a kind of a office manager / FM person that would run a site with multiple floors. So that was my first entry into the corporate world. And then since then, I've gone through the ranks. I had a cluster of buildings at one point, then I moved and I became more of a building manager. Then I became a general manager in a bit of a departure, but it kind of tied the FM and office management with my passion for music. I became the general manager for a members club for content creators. So that we were based in Canary Wharf, it's Cube. Shout out to the lovely people at Cube. They just did 1 year anniversary from that site, which is great. And that was a kind of a hybrid mixed role of doing, what do you say, traditionally office management and facilities management with that hospitality and front-facing business. And then after that, I decided to take a big break. Got a young daughter as well that I loved a bit, so I really wanted to spend time with her because I wasn't really spending much time with the opening and everything. And then I managed to get this role with Cushman, which, again, touches on hybrid. I like hybrid. You'll see that we'll be talking about more of the office management role, and then I'll go straight into FM suddenly all the time. And that's what this role is all about, the Workplace Experience Manager here with Cushman & Wakefield. And my client essentially is a quite high-end international investment company. So, and I'm managing with them all the soft services. So you can imagine all your cleaning, security, your reception services, hospitality, catering, landscaping. And then we have the hard services with the M&E. So maintaining the building essentially and make sure that it runs. And that's kind of the overall goal of one of these kind of Swiss Army knives kind of approach.
Yeah, that Swiss Army knife comes up quite a bit, doesn't it?
And all the time.
The Mary Poppins bag and everything. So a really interesting background. And it's funny that you mention about hospitality, because that is very typically one of the routes that we see office mm-hmm. and facilities managers, FMs, as you say, come into or come from and through. And I totally appreciate and understand what you say about the hiring process there and the perception that, oh, you haven't been in this industry or this sector, so you can't come into it, and you almost have to take two or three steps backwards in your career just
Absolutely.
To get your foot in the door in these industries. I really don't understand that in administrative and office management roles, because your skills are completely and utterly transferable to a different environment, don't you think?
Absolutely, 100% transferable. But that's, and a lot of people still don't think they can make the jump. But I've still got friends that work in hotels, and I'm saying, try it. Just go for a few interviews, and you'll understand that there's a world out there where all your skills are very transferable. And one of the main things I always say, it's a more civilized environment, because hotels can be pretty full on, and it's a 24/7 operation. It never stops. I'm not saying that an office stops, but you do have more of a designated time frame where business is happening. Hotels, you walk in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you're dealing with whatever was left from you from the night team, or vice versa. So, but yeah, as you said, there seems to be, I'm not sure if that's the case, because obviously it's been many years since I haven't worked in hotels, but it feels that that's a conversation piece that tends to pop up here and there with hospitality people that try to jump onto corporate.
Yeah, I guess, we recruit sometimes through the office management group for clients, and I guess it depends on the client, because sometimes that client will say they must have worked in finance, or they must have worked in a boutique type firm, because they need to understand the culture. And that can be hard to find when you're trying to recruit for that role. But yeah, as a candidate and sitting on the other side, like a lot of our listeners will be, I think the advice you give there is spot on, to just go for it and explain that try and find the similarities in the environments and the challenges that may be present in both environments, but also understand that actually it's you that has the capability and the skill set to work and look after a workspace, be that a hotel, be that an office. And it's all about knowing, like you say, the hard and soft FM pieces, the mechanical and electrical items, like, the M&E, as you call it, life safety systems, and the requirements, because a lot of this really falls under the legislative health and safety pieces. So, yeah, sell yourself on the basis of those and demonstrate that it's the environment in terms of the sector of the business that they're in actually isn't always relevant to you and your skill set. So.
100%, and all this is online. I mean, all the knowledge you can get, because at the end of the day, all the M&E things, the health and safety, it's just knowledge based. It's not a skill that you have in you. I mean, when I started in the corporate world, in as a community manager, I was managing health and safety. I got my IOS certificate as a certification as well, for permits, work permits. I have never done a work permit at that point, for example, and dealing with contractors and dealing with all sorts of things. It's not something that you already have in you. It's something that you learn, and that's something that everybody needs to understand. It's a learning curve. But as long as you have the right attitude, and you can sell, as you said, those points, those transferable skills, I mean, it should be an easy one. But it's, again, as we say, it seems to be a little bit of a, not sure, when not meeting on both sides of the conversation for some reason. But yeah, no, they should take it into consideration, definitely, especially with hotel people, because they do work hard. And
Yeah.
again, it's a, as I said, it's not a civilized environment, so they are used to dealing with chaotic scenarios and the most random things. So they wouldn't be
Yeah.
surprised if, you run out of coffee all of a sudden. That would be the super easy to solve for them.
The lowest level thing to fix. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas in an office, it's slightly higher up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting differences in dynamics between the two. So set the scene for us then. What is the office like there? How many people are there? And what do you do in a typical week for them? You've mentioned some of the things already, but give us a little bit more of an idea of what it's like, what it feels like and looks like on the ground there.
Sure. So my client is very eclectic and very different to the norm. Even for Rush at Cushman, they are a level above some of our clients, and I don't want to diss out any other clients, because they're all amazing. But we are dealing with the next echelon of service over here. So our office is a beautiful early 1800s Georgian Grade One listed building. So you can imagine, beautiful spaces. It's just recently been renovated as well. It took them a year to open it. We opened only a couple of months ago. So beautiful spaces, and you can imagine, we're based in a very nice area of London, so it has a lot of history with it. So obviously the day-to-day is never the same, and again, I guess this is the normal kind of thing for any office manager or any facilities manager. But over here we have 6 levels in this building, which is all spread out into different areas. You've got, your offices, you've got an event space, you've got like a shared workspace as well, private offices, you've got your pantries for your service staff. And my role on a day-to-day basis is, apart from ensuring that those areas are completely top-notch, ready, stocked, all consumables are taken care of, all the invoicing is on point as well with all our suppliers, is also the fact that we get a lot of last-minute requests for events, and these events could be pretty full on with a very, very tight margin of time frames. So you might be given a brief on a Friday, and this needs to be set up and signed off by Wednesday. They're based internationally, so obviously they don't sometimes adhere to the timings, and you know, we all weekends, it's very hard to find people sometimes on a weekend to do X, Y, and Z. So those are some of the hurdles, as well as some of the things that you need to, you know, be super quick on. And with the client, they're pretty much like, I need it done, and I need it done properly. They put a lot of trust on us. They put a lot of trust in me, which is great. And again, you have to gain that trust with these people. They're very, very much of, do you understand this is your task? Yes, go for it. Come back with the results. I don't want any issues. You need to sort out everything. So yeah, again, you have to put that kind of multiple hats and try and sort it out and give them the last proposal that is the one that they should see. They don't want to waste any time looking at, you know, 5,000 quotes for the same thing. I should know the standard that they're looking for. And pretty much that is a kind of a day-to-day here. You've got your basic stuff that you need to cover, all your health and safety checks, all my audits, like cleaning audits. I'll be walking the building several times a day just to make sure that they're ready for any last-minute visitors. And you were mentioning about the team. So the team over here is, we have a office manager who is the client themselves. And then within part of her team, you have a facilities manager, which is a bit weird because I'm also the FM, but it's for their internal things. You also have an IT manager, and you have a admin assistant as well that manages all the paperwork for them. And then from our side, we run, I've got myself as the workplace experience manager, and then you have a receptionist, we have the security are under us as well, the cleaning team are under us, and as well all the ad hoc catering team that would come in to do any events. And then what it is, it's a hub, it's an international hub. So what we'll essentially be getting people flying over from all over the world on a regular basis. So for example, this week we had about 10, 15 people in the building that were doing meetings, calls, international calls, meeting with some of their partners in the UK. So again, it becomes a hub where a centralized area where everybody can just meet and conduct their business.
Wow, lots going on. So Cushman Wakefield are hired by this client. Do the client own the building, and then essentially you're the outsourced building and facilities management to provide
Correct.
common parts, or to, well, I suppose there aren't common parts if they own the whole thing. But yeah, very interesting structure
Yeah,
there.
it's a fully serviced building from our perspective. So we supply all the services to the building and to the clients, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Busy role.
so.
And how big is it? What are we talking about in terms of square footage there? I can see the background.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is one of the Grade One listed rooms. Yeah. So beautiful woodwork as well from the, I think it was built in 1825. So a lot of this room is pretty much original from the day. It's beautiful, beautiful building. So the layout, six floors, around 12, 13,000 square feet. That's the
Wow.
layout. So, and it
Yeah.
looks very small from the outside because you can imagine terrace houses in central London, but when you walk inside, it's like a maze. It's just, and they've done so many extensions and things that it's a beautiful, beautiful building. And that the ceilings in some of the rooms are like 5 4 5 meter tall ceilings. So you, beautiful, beautiful building. Yes.
Amazing. I might need to make a little trip and come say hi to you and the office manager there at
Definitely, definitely.
some point.
This podcast is brought to you in association with Bespoke Commercial Cleaning. For 20 years, Bespoke has been innovating to make your cleaning service best in class. Starting from humble roots, Bespoke now cleans national monuments, city skyscrapers, and offices in and around London and the South East. But what's the secret sauce? Why Bespoke? Because we can tailor any cleaning system around you. We're on a mission to make excellence in cleaning the standard. It all starts with our staff benefiting from living wages, an industry-leading employment welfare package, and genuine career progression. Today, we are carbon neutral, disability confident, and pioneering a new approach to commercial cleaning that puts our employees and your wishes at the heart of all we do. Visit us today at bespoke-cleaning.co.uk. That's bespoke-cleaning.co.uk. In celebration of our partnership with the Office Management Group, we're offering to plant a tree in the name of anyone who responds to this and quotes the code TREE. If you're unsure if you're getting the best, contact us today at bespoke-cleaning.co.uk.
So Given all of that and what you've shared with us about the role, how do you keep up with this ever-changing demand on office and facilities management, and perhaps working with their office manager there, as I expect you do, and the ever-changing world of offices and how they're utilized? What's that been like for you?
Well, with this client specifically, due to the nature that we're literally 5 days a week in the office. There's no work from home. There's the ability to do so if you require, but we have to be on site, mainly because it's the caliber of the clients. They do expect to walk in the building and have a full team ready for them whenever they require to be in the building. So it's a bit of a departure from some of my other places. As I said, when I started as a community manager, it was in the city of London, Liverpool Street. We had a Broadgate, the big estate, and we were managing a flexible workspace scenario over there. And when we went through COVID, that's when things obviously started changing, and the whole hybrid working and working less from the office, work from where you want or work from where you feel more comfortable. And throughout my different roles, I've experienced that in certain levels, which has always been very interesting. And then when walking in here and realizing that my team are always on site, it was refreshing in a way, because I do, even through COVID, I was one of the first ones that raised my hand and I said, I would like to go back to the office, please. I don't work well in the kitchen at home with two, three screens. And it wasn't very sustainable for me. Other people love it, and I know that it works for them because they have a different maybe mindset, but I do enjoy being in the office and walking around, seeing the building, seeing people, grabbing a coffee in the local cafe or something. It gives me, life essentially.
Yeah, I think most people are like that, and we've just got so used to the opposite, haven't we, as humans, that coming back to it's been very difficult. So the client themselves, do they have a hybrid model in place where you've had to adjust workplaces, collaboration spaces, etc., with them to make that more appealing to come in, or have they stuck with a 5 day a week model?
No, so the client that so the office team that works in the building, so let's call it the core team, they're there 5 days a week. The difference is with the people that travel over, they might be here for a week and might use the office for 3, 4 days instead, and maybe work somewhere else or just work from the hotel or wherever they're residing for the week. But when people are here, again, the building is so nice, and I'm not trying to oversell it, but it's so beautiful that it makes sense to come here and spend the day working, because it's just a great spot to have meetings, and it just elevates the whole conversation, really.
Yeah, and the experience of the employees, I bet.
It as well, yeah.
Yeah. And that community manager role, so that was that for, serviced office type space like the WeWorks and the Togs, because that's often I worked for Worklife for quite a while as their FM. They were a client of mine, and they used to be called community managers. I don't know if they are still now, the people that were essentially office managers, facilities managers, but also on the sales side, trying to make sure that all the desks were sold and the offices were full and everything else. So was it a little bit of a sales role combo that you had?
Less of a sales role, because at that point I was working for British Land, and they were literally launching, when I joined, their Storey model, which essentially was one of the earlier flexible workspaces or businesses in London as well. We had the WeWorks, and you already had like Togg and walking around, but it was 2016, 17, so relatively new to the market within reason. And yeah, it was a completely weird role. Again, community manager makes no sense. I mean, I would have ex understood workplace experience or workplace manager makes more sense, like my role right now. It's more fitting. But yeah, definitely what you said. You're trying to do FM, customer service, the sales bit, doing walk arounds with potential clients. And it was a flexible workspace, so essentially we had private offices, but we would cater for bigger groups. So we wouldn't be doing the 4, 5, 10 people offices. We were looking at 50 to 100 people offices, even bigger ones with 200 to 300 people, which was great because you get to see a completely different environment and all the different offices. And the good thing that the building I was it was fintech mainly, and a lot of tech companies. So that also brought a completely different clientele, not your suits and jackets and everything. It was more very relaxed and very easy to deal with them.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because at Work Life and some other clients that I've had that are in that space, the flexible working space or co-working, there's so many different names for it, but it was quite challenging because I had to really work hard doing the health and safety for them to educate the members, as we used to call them, the sort of clients within those offices, especially if they had more than five staff, and then, you know, again, 50 to 100, that they need their own health and safety procedures in place, and they need their own fire marshals and first aiders, you know, at that size.
Absolutely.
And that capacity in terms of space, plus they're up on the sixth floor and we're down here on the ground floor. And did you find the same? You had to really work hard with the clients, with the members, whatever they may have called them then, with British Land, to ensure that they were adequately prepared for emergency evacuations and incidents and things, without the reliance being on essentially what was probably you and a couple of other people in your team for hundreds of staff in the building.
100%, yeah, always. And I think it's still the case with these flexible workspaces, where the client or the member or the, you know, whatever, you know, every company calls them, they still don't understand their obligations as an employer. Sometimes for us, for example, as well with Cushman, if you're working at a site and the landlord owns the place and they're the client, there's some responsibilities, mainly health and safety, your fire risk assessments. You know, there's a duty of care that they are fully responsible. And absolutely in flex, you still see that a lot. But again, it's just the flex industry as well caters for younger companies, or companies that, you know, are not fully versed or don't have, again, a facilities team or an operations kind of or a health and safety team or a HSC team. So these things are, you have to explain them very, very clearly to them, because sometimes it's like, oh no, I'm renting and this is all on you. And it's not really, you have obligations. You have 50 people that depend on you if there's a fire, even though that we would have fire marshals, first aiders to support all that operation. Yeah, definitely. There's always that conversation with them. Oh, have you got any fire marshals? Oh no, we haven't thought about that. Oh, well, you definitely need, you know, this is the volume of the space, these are the amount of people, you need X amount of fire marshals for this place, first aiders as well. The same with PEEP forms, personal evacuation plans as well. So very alien to a lot of people when they have maybe a wheelchair user or somebody, you know, who is playing footy on the weekend is coming in a cast today. It's like, oh, have you reported it? Does that person have a buddy to evacuate? And they're looking at you like, oh, I'm not sure what you're talking about. So those things definitely come up a lot during in the flex world. At least my experience over the past few years, it's been the case.
Yeah, much more challenging, I think, because there's a lot more companies typically than what you would have in a leased office, where they've got bigger space,
exactly,
therefore less tenants, and the landlord wouldn't really, in, you know, building management team wouldn't really get as involved in that scenario with the tenants, because they're not paying for all the services. Mm-hmm. And you know, the furniture and things aren't included in a leased office typically. I mean, there's all sorts going on now with Cat A Plus in the world, where it's like the landlord ready-made plug and go, plug and play spaces. But yeah, just a warning and a reminder to all the listeners that if you are in a serviced office and you're the office manager or admin assistant in that space, look at what your responsibilities are still. Don't think your service provider is doing it all for you, because we see this happen a lot. And they are responsible for that space, but not your policies or your training or anything else. So Cushman & Wakefield is a, you know, well-known big organization, very much well-known throughout the world of real estate. What is it like working for them? What's your journey been with them so far? How long have you been with them for?
I joined 2 months ago, 2 months ago with Cushman, and I'm part of the IFM team, which is the Integrated Facilities Management team. So again, even though Cushman are known as well for the real estate, they also have a very strong facilities arm around the world. And again, as you say, massive companies, around 50 to 55,000 people around the world. So it's very, very big. So far, it's been great. Honestly, the people that work at Cushman, they've supported me very well. And you can see there's a lot of knowledge within the team. Again, from a compliance perspective, from a procurement perspective, from a service perspective as well, all the service partners that we have on our portfolio are pretty, pretty amazing as well. They're really quick to respond to queries. And as I said, our client is pretty different. So our service partners have had to really scratch their heads a little bit. But they, again, it's working really, really well. And the client is happy as well with Cushman, which is the overall goal for us as the service providers. That's going really, really well.
So who do you report into? What's the structure for you? Do you have a dual reporting line where you report to the client and then someone somewhere else based around the world at Cushman, or is it only to Cushman? How does that work for you structurally?
So it's a multiple reporting line, yeah. So I do have kind of a dotted line to the office manager here, because again, that person is the main stakeholder within the local office. I also have some kind of direct line with the international FM team for the client because they're based abroad. So there's always conversations going on, and there's potentially projects that come my way or assignments. And then obviously I report directly to the account director for Cushman, who essentially is, again, the main point of contact for the client. So yes.
Lots of one-to-ones with people in your diary then.
There's a lot. My diary is color-coded, and pink is normally meetings, and it's always a sea of pink. Because with Cushman as well, you have a training process as well, which is great, because they do upskill you with all the, for obviously to understand internal processes, billing processes, procurement, logging in, any kind of maintenance thing. They've got a lot of systems that you also need to learn. So it's either 50-50 of training, and the other side is just getting to meet everybody within the business. So then you have all those contacts, which is great.
Yeah, sounds like it. It's probably very nice to work for a company that actually understands what FM and what health and safety and what office management and so on is, because so many people in office management roles listening to this podcast will understand that they report to people that don't get what office management is.
Yes.
Before we started recording, you were sharing about the fact that you are from Spain, which you've shared on the pod as well there in your introduction. Tell us more about that and what we were talking about, I suppose, in regards to Spain and the perception of office management there versus here.
Absolutely. I mean, we were touching on the fact that some of your podcasts, especially with the office managers that are based elsewhere, not in the UK, there's this similarity as well in Spain, that the people don't understand what an office manager is. There's always this, it's classed as an admin role, and an admin role never as a manager. So obviously it's kind of downgraded a little bit and downplayed, unless you're in a big company, like an international company based in one of the capitals like Madrid or Barcelona, which obviously they use their international structures to run their space. It's very hard to explain what I do to my friends in Spain or family as well. Every time you say, oh, so are you in real estate? No, I'm not in real estate. No, I manage a building. So you're like a concierge? No, not that service. I manage like everything. And there's always this back and forth conversation, and I explain the tasks and they're like, oh, no, we don't have anything like that here. I'm like, okay. Interesting. It's for me, it's super interesting that it doesn't, maybe things have changed. I mean, I left Spain 12, 13 years ago. So for me, Spain is still very alien for me now in terms of work, the work environment, because things have changed quite a lot. But I still feel it when I explain my role to my friends, they don't get it at all. They don't get the FM, office management, workplace experience manager. They struggle to understand it.
We need to find and create, don't we, between us as a community, some sort of definitive sentence or statement. I mean, I have some that I use in presentations and things about managing an effective working environment to ensure it's safe, healthy, and motivating for staff to get on and do their job. That's the usual blurb, but that doesn't then tell them everything, because there's so much in these roles, isn't there, in terms of remit and responsibility. But
yeah,
whenever I'm with my friends, and certainly in the past when I was in office ops, facilities management, you know, permanent roles with companies, I would say we'd be in a restaurant. I would sit there and say, well, look up at the ceiling, everything kind of here and around us, like the artwork, the plants, the furniture, everything that we're sitting in this just very restaurant is my responsibility to make sure it's maintained, it's clean, it's procured if we need to buy new stuff or whatever. And they'd be like, oh, okay. You know, and it would start sinking in on that basis. But then there's so much else beyond that they don't see.
The worst part is when you actually go to a venue or a restaurant or a competitor building, if you're doing a bit of study, you start seeing the issues, for example, and you start, oh no, that's not right, or oh, that hasn't been done right, or you start looking around, oh, that firehead is capped, why is that capped? And you start thinking, I always go and tell them, I say, hey, I've just noticed that your smokehead is capped, just letting you know. Okay, work in the industry, don't, you know, I always try and help them, because it could be a contractor that's just left it there and they haven't noticed. But yeah, you tend to have an eye for certain details that, let's call them, civilians don't normally see that when they walk into a venue, and they don't understand that there's somebody that's curated all that space.
Yeah, it's funny that you do that and you see that, because I'm exactly the same. And when I've completed courses with some of the advanced or intermediate delegates that have done our courses, and we highlight them, we sit in an office space when we do it, and we highlight to them things like the sprinklers, smoke heads, etc., and doors and bits that look wrong, like fire doors where the seals not intact or missing or whatever. And And I get so many people when I see them at the events, or they'll chat to me and say, oh, it's so funny, I went into a restaurant today and I like told the manager that they haven't got this in place or that this is broken, and they enact in the same way that I do in these environments. But I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast before now, but I did go into my dry cleaners years ago. I think I'd only had this company for about a year or two, and they had, it was dry cleaners I used to go to all the time just to walk from my house, and they had the old HSE poster up, the health and safety executive poster. It was like the cream version before they changed it. And I just couldn't help myself. I was like, you realize that you can get fined for having the incorrect poster up? And they were like, what? And I said, that poster came out of use like 2 years ago, whatever it was. And they're like, oh my God. And the next time I went in there to pick my dry cleaning up, they changed it. And they're like, thanks for telling us. We didn't realize we could get an on the spot fine. I can't remember what the fine is. It's like £1,000 or something around
something,
that.
It's something like that. Yeah. Cause again, it's legislation. So you need to adhere to it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As you say, you start seeing things that a normal person wouldn't even pick because of your day to day, isn't it? And it's part of your role. You have to see these things. You have to be aware so you can always keep to date and make sure that the place is running top notch. But it's so interesting because it happens with other some of my ex-colleagues as well. We walk around and we're like, we'll be in a venue and we're like, you know, rubbing shoulders, look at that, that's not right, is it? No, we wouldn't have done it like that. No, you know. Yeah,
or just looking at the skirting boards and seeing how dirty they are.
Yeah.
Hawk eyes, I call it hawk eyes.
No, definitely.
Business continuity planning. Have you ever considered what might happen to your business if it went into a disaster recovery status? That's the focus for this week's tip. It is something generally that can significantly impact your business, for example, financially or contractually, or even reputationally if you are in the public domain or you have lots of clients and customers who you have contracts with that you've promised certain service levels to. It could damage your reputation if you don't handle a disaster appropriately. And that could be anything from the building shutting down, like building denial, or because there's been a fire or a flood, to then things like your computer equipment, like cyber attacks and security and thefts and so on and so forth. Now, the cyber elements are really important, as most of us know, because we are quite able these days to work from the cloud and therefore remotely. Most of our business continuity plans will be go and work from home, go and work from another site if the site's inaccessible. But when you start thinking about the cloud-based technology and all the different suppliers that you rely upon for your business to make money and to keep it going, have you had conversations with IT or with your suppliers, if IT perhaps sits with you in the main, as to how you're backed up and what that would look like should their systems fail, shut down? You know, we've all seen it where Twitter, or X as it's called now, has gone down many times, or Facebook's gone down and everybody jumps onto Twitter, all these different things. So give all of that some consideration and think about how you would, or your business should, be managing its recovery, so a disaster recovery, in the event of something significant happening. The easiest way to start with this is with something called a business impact analysis. We've got templates for all of this, of course, on the Office Management Portal, but essentially the business impact analysis looks at all the different departments and their roles and what would potentially be critical in the first few hours, 24 hours, week or so of a disaster occurring, of you being unable to access certain systems or the property and so on and so forth. Get started with that. Get your business protected. If it sits with you, put yourself as the business continuity manager. Get people around the table talking about it. Build that policy and protect it, and then manage it from there on out.
So now, Byron, can you share something from your office manager diary, please, or a you won't believe it but moment?
Oh, God. I mean, there's so many, especially from hotels and as well with offices. I've seen a lot, which is good because I'm completely cured from the majority of things. But I must say that one of the most stressful situations that we had, this was back when I was working at Broadgate at Storey. We were informed by the LFB that we had a gas leak. Not us, it was a gas leak within the campus. So as you can imagine, full building with maybe almost 1,000 people, and the whole campus needed to be evacuated. So with Storey, we were very, very lucky. We were literally about to open a brand new Storey building around the corner at 100 Liverpool Street. And the space was built, because Storey, the good thing with them is that it was a fully set up office space. All the furniture, everything was all standardized. So it was ready to move in. So we kind of decided, let's do it. So I coordinated essentially with the help of my team, which is an amazing, amazing group of people, the move of maybe 300-400 people, very seamlessly discussing with all high-end stakeholders, like, that this is what's happening. We can't keep you in the building for health and safety reasons. There's a radius that the LFB are giving us. Let's move you to the other building. And obviously this is not sure, you know, but obviously all the legal start coming out in terms of loss of earnings, what you're doing to us. It's not us, you know, it's what it is right now. We've got the LFB screaming at all the buildings with the loud hailers, like, guys, get out. So we managed to move all that. I managed to get our internet provider as well to habilitate a bunch of private networks for all our clients. And that went very smoothly. We're talking about 3 hours, 4 hours of this happening. And that went really, really smoothly. But you can imagine at one point you're sitting down and you've got all these streams of information coming through. You've got the LFB talking to the main people in the estate. You've got the estate talking to you. You've got my management talking to me. All the office managers, executive assistants looking at me saying, what are we doing? All these different channels, communication channels. We had Slack, we had emails, we had phones, we had WhatsApps. We're literally trying to completely make sure that everything's on point, and it worked really well. But yeah, I did sweat a lot that day because I was coordinating all that move with my team, and it was great because then we did get awarded a little prize as well, a little award for that, because it went so well that none of the customers complained as well. Obviously they did, but they didn't have any major issues to their operation. It was more like, oh, let's go for a break, move everybody around, set them up, and they were ready to go. But yeah, that was one of those crazy ones. You're like, is the place going to blow up? What's happening? You know, but we still need to operate. It's one of those things that I would have just, let's go, let's leave it. But again, business is business, isn't it? And people need to operate at full capacity, regardless if there's something minor. Well, it wasn't minor, but it eventually wasn't anything. But yeah, and I may not have explained it as best as I could, because in my memory it was like full on chaos, and you got a lot of people literally like, what's happening, what are you going to do, you know, we want to move first, we've got more people in the office. And you're like, guys, calm down, we're going to fix it, but we just need time. There's a lot of logistics spreadsheets being created on the spot for you to make sure that who's in what office, who needs this, who needs that, are we moving equipment from their office because they need it to work, you know, what networks are being habilitated, what are the passwords for the networks, catering as well, because obviously we didn't have amenities ready, we had to supply all that as well and help out. So pretty full on. It was very interesting, and again, it's having a good team around you that helps make it happen.
It's like, it's BCP, isn't it? It's a business continuity plan and disaster recovery plan. So just to explain to anyone overseas or that's not aware, so LFB is the London Fire Brigade, yes. But also you just move them temporarily into these other offices so it was like having a DR site essentially and just scrambling to set that up.
Literally, but instead of having one client, you have maybe 5 or 6 different clients with completely different operations. Some of them are very confidential kind of businesses, so you also need to reassure them that the space is ready for that kind of business, because it was. It's just trying to win that battle, which sometimes it's the hardest thing is convincing the client to, this is the solution that I'm proposing, this is the best solution right now, you're going to be able to continue with your business, the site is fully set up, don't worry about anything. Essentially, it's almost like for like, because we had a very, very, the model that we had was almost the same, just the decor would change a little bit. So no, definitely it's, yeah, like a DR site, as you mentioned, but very last minute.
The importance of disaster recovery plans, people, if you don't have them, these things are beyond our control and they will always look at you to find a solution. So how do you approach building and maintaining positive relationships with your colleagues and stakeholders within, I suppose, both parts of your role and the businesses that align to those?
Well, I tend to always meet with people. First thing is getting to know them a little bit more. And it's not just work. I like to know a little bit more about them, because then you can relate to anybody anytime. But it's also about demonstrating as well that you're not here to fool around. You're here to do work, and demonstrating that on a regular basis. And, well, constantly, really. You can't really say regular, but on a constant basis, you earn that trust with the people that you work with. Because again, I'm new to the business, so nobody really knows how I operate, how I work, my knowledge, even though, you know, there's a CV and there's been interviews. It's when you're left to your own devices to run a building or to deal with escalations or anything, that's when you have to shine. And I think that those are the key areas where, you know, Have those conversations. Make sure that, you know, you get to know everybody that you need to know. Don't hide in the corner and wait for things to happen and then have to reach out. Because if your name is already on the table, it's easier for them to get back to you. Or, hey, I know Byron's there. Let's drop him a line. He will be able to help. But that's one of the key things that I've always done at any place I've gone. The first couple of weeks, it's me getting to know everybody to get to know me. And I'm, hey, I'm here to do this. This is what my role is. Anything I can help you with? And trying to build those bridges before I need them rather than being reactive and saying, who do I need to call to get this sorted? Yeah, definitely.
I do the same. I think that's one of the first things as some advice there, to get to know people when you start in a new office management role. And ask open questions like, what else do you do? Especially if it's suppliers, like, what else could you do for our business? And that's not necessarily to say that we're going to give you that extra piece of work, but it's consolidating your suppliers down, understanding who you can go to for what, and then almost doing the same internally. Like, I always used to shadow the heads of departments in my new role as an office manager. So I'd start there, get to know my team and all the remits and responsibilities. And then within my first 3 months, ideally sooner if I could, and if they could spare the time, I'd go and sit with the department heads for 30 minutes an hour. So do you mind if I shadow you, ask some questions whilst you're working and get to know you and the team and just understand what you do? What are your busiest times of the year? Why are they busiest? What are your sort of pressure points? What's most important to you in this office space? And you build those relationships and that bridges trust then. And as you say, absolutely, they then feel like they can come to you, you can go to them. And it's not always just when there's fires to put out that relationship strikes a balance again. It's done way before.
And when you've built those relationships, especially if it's something, an ongoing relationship that you've had for maybe with somebody at work for, you know, 6 months, a year, and it does hit the fan suddenly, that, you know, there's a trust there already. There's a relationship, you know, you can maybe discuss things in a different way and say, look, I really need you to help me with this, because it's just really gone pear-shaped. That's something that Cushman, for example, do really well. That's something that I'm very happy to see. It's all the intros that are in my diary. Even the day I started, I had a look at my diary, and my diary was already full with intros, 30-minute, 1-hour intros with key stakeholders, people that maybe I don't deal with on a regular basis. But again, hey, this is part of procurement. This is a part of finance. You'll be dealing with this person maybe 2-3 weeks from now. Don't worry, but we want those intros there. So you then remember, oh, I need to go to this person, or, oh, I've got a question regarding an invoice. Who do I go to? There you go. That's the person from accounts payable or wherever it is. And that's something that, for example, Cushman do really well. They make sure that the person that joins has all that visibility already beforehand. And then, you know, you go to head office, or they come to sites and you get to meet those people in person. It's always strange when you've had maybe 4 weeks of calls with somebody and they walk in through the door and you're like, oh, there you go. I've known you for ages now.
I can see your legs.
Yeah, literally. Oh, you're taller than, yeah. But I normally get, oh, you're shorter than I imagine now. Yeah, I'm shorter than I imagine. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Confidence boost. Let's go.
Yeah, lovely. Cheers for that. Are there any specific tips or wisdom nuggets that you can share with people who are aspiring to be in this profession or evolve? You know, you run a team there now. You're obviously fairly senior in the role, and I don't doubt have more aspirations. But how can they get more involved in their roles and develop to get more responsibility, more autonomy or promotions, etc.? What are your tips to share, Byron?
Well, I was asked once what my role was in one word, and it was really hard. And I came up with a facilitator. So, and obviously they asked me to break that down. What does it mean? And I said, well, you obviously help people with whatever they need. And you're that person that when they call you, they leave it in your hands, you sort it out. So to achieve that, you definitely need to, as you said earlier, ask open questions, be involved. If there's a topic that you're not sure about, just do some research, or even contact somebody, say, hey, can I spend some time with you? I really want to know about, I don't know, procurement, or I want to know about FM, for example, especially, you know, if you're an office manager that doesn't have a lot of FM experience, speak to your FM or speak to the engineer that comes every week to do your PPMs, for example, your planned maintenance. Those things are fundamental for me. I've always learned more through people than through courses or anything like that. Definitely asking questions and really genuinely being interested in why does this work this way? I don't want to know the outcome. If I press this button, this happens. I want to know what happens when I press the button throughout the whole process. and to the outcome. And that has always given me a better, bigger picture of things once you know why things happen. Because things will happen and sometimes you don't know why, but if you know the hows and the insides and who's responsible in the different departments, then you know how to tackle situations much better and much quicker.
Yeah, again, it comes down to communication, being proactive, using initiative. And
100%.
I think, I always say, whenever I'm teaching around this kind of thing about top tips on office management, it is being a bit of a detective and turning every stone and looking in every corner and opening every door, but also asking who, why, what, where, when, how, why, you know, all these different questions that help you understand.
It's being inquisitive, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Being inquisitive, but positively, you're not trying to find out all the dirt. It's more like, why does it work like that? Who's this person? Who's that department? Mm. Why does that person report to that? Oh, okay, and now I understand. It's all, as you said, finding the whys, the whos, the exactly, and that will give you a bag of tricks as well, because then you'll know how to maybe counter certain things that happen that way. You go the other way, for example, or you contact a different department. Oh, this person's out on annual leave. Can you sort this out for me? Giving you random examples, but definitely it's about communication is key. At the end of the day, if you're an office manager or a facilities manager, or like myself, a workplace manager, you're dealing with people at the end of the day. So communicating with everybody is key. And I don't distinguish between a manager or for example, my cleaning team. We're all the same. I communicate the same way with everybody. And that's key as well, because you gain trust and the respect of your peers, because you don't discriminate just because somebody's doing a higher paid job than somebody else. And that just gives you a broader perspective of everything.
Totally agree. I do think, yeah, we have to have beginning, middle, end to be able to do these jobs, to be Hawkeye or detective, and to be able to communicate at every operating level, you know, every stakeholder level, because the cleaners are still stakeholders.
Absolutely. And you'll see that sometimes, and I don't want to call them like line staff, but you know, if that we can use that as an example, they are key. And I know that became a cliche in hotels as well throughout the years that I heard, oh, you know, reception and cleaning and the waiters are key. But it is true. I mean, if I don't have my cleaning team on point, motivated and knowing the standards that I'm going to be auditing, the client won't be happy, for example. And the same with my receptionist, the same with my security team. If they're not doing the job, it impacts my line of work so much. And then we look terrible. We look like we're not being professional and we're not delivering the agreed service that we did with the client. So it's definitely super key.
Yeah, it all feeds in, doesn't it, to that working environment. And it's interesting you say about people, because the most difficult thing when you are in a larger organization as well to navigate are people politics. Mm-hmm. And like you say, having that bag of tricks and understanding the dynamics and the politics and the red tape fairly early on is really good, so that you don't stumble and trip when shit hits the fan, as you say.
Literally.
Literally. So Byron, to finish on, what's the future looking like for you? Where do you want to be? You have so much, and I've really enjoyed this, because there's so much that you've talked about that really aligns with how I operate in these spaces and the conscious effort I make to make it work as proactively as I can, because that then puts much more in my control for when things do go wrong, and they always will. But what is in the future for you? Where do you want to be?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I don't really know yet. I know that I think there's a nice journey ahead of me with Cushman, definitely. Just seeing how they operate and seeing how they are across the EME region with the IFM team that I'm part of. I can see a lot of possibilities there, maybe not internationally, maybe based in the UK, but definitely hopefully running like a larger contract down the line. Obviously, I do love my client to pieces. I mean, they're a very interesting group of people. So maybe, you know, with them, if there's any expansion, running that expansion, but those are maybe shorter term goals. But I do see myself working in this kind of environment for a long time. I mean, I left hotels, but I came into corporate hospitality. So there's a trend there as well. And my family have always been in hospitality. So I think this thing of being, again, that person to go to and resolve things, I think that will always be a thing that sticks. So definitely for now, my path is with Cushman. And I think that there's going to be a long, long journey, as I said, with them. And I'm looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, that facilitator, it's a great word to use.
I think it describes our work precisely to the point. I'm a facilitator. That everybody understands what that means. I think that you come to me with a problem, I'll solve it. You come to me with a query, I'll solve it. You come to me with a project, I'll work on it. You know, and it's that person, that go-to person that everybody can trust and rely on. And again, when you have a solid office manager for many years and they leave the business, the whole office crumbles. It just, everybody has to start doing things and you can't, they don't know what to do because that person ran everything. So yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, thank you very much for being a guest on the Office Manager Diaries. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure as well, Hannah. It's been amazing talking to you as well.
Whoa, listener, don't leave me just yet. I have something really exciting to share with you. We are back again hosting the Office Management Show in 2024. This is going to be on the 24th of April this year, and we've got so many things in store for you. This is an exhibition and conference rolled into one in one day in London. I appreciate we've got loads of international listeners, and I'm so sorry that this is an in-person event, but the seminar sessions can be bought online afterwards at any time in the Office Management portal. So if you aren't a member of that, do register for a free account. And once the show has finished in April, we will put the sessions that are recorded on there for you to listen back to. But for those that can get to London, please do join us. It's completely free to get your ticket from our website, theofficemanagementgroup.com/the-show. We've got some incredible speakers lined up, including our keynote speaker, Naomi Riches, MBE, who is a Paralympic champion. She is going to take our VIP breakfast for the day, and it's just £25 for a ticket to attend that breakfast. There's people like myself speaking on health and safety. We've got Excel, AI, confidence and difficult conversations, culture, sustainability. There's so many hot and incredible topics. You do not want to miss this, as well as over 40 exhibitors showcasing their products and services to you. It is completely free to register, to get a ticket and to attend. There is a small fee of £15 to attend any and all of the seminar sessions that you wish to, and a £25 fee to join us at the VIP breakfast, and breakfast is included in that ticket price. 24th of April 2024 in London. Go to our website www.theofficemanagementgroup.com/the-show for all the information and to register for your free ticket. I look forward to seeing you then.